Did you notice that the set code is Matt?
I was just thinking that.
It was a March of the Machine. So you had Mom and Matt. it feels like this is the stepdad of the sets, right? Because this is my mom, and this is Matt. This is my mom's friend, Matt. And welcome, everybody, back to another episode of the Mind Sculptors Podcast. I am your host, Callahan, and joining me today to help me sculpt a winning mindset, CEDH. See, we're working on it. Are my lovely co-hosts all the way out from San Francisco. It's your boy. It's Phoenix. How you doing, Phoenix?
Doing great. Wish the Warriors won last night, but that's
oh yes, trust me. I'm gonna give you shit about that here in a moment. Also joining us, all the way up from Montreal, where they don't have a baseball team and they don't have a basketball team, is our good the Frenchman himself, Pongo. How are you doing, Pongo?
Feel attacked. I mean, especially the no baseball team thing that
you used to. You used to have the Metros. The Metros were great.
The Expos, yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Rip
the Expos.
Yeah.
One of the better baseball logos, I'll have to say. One of the better baseball logos. But what, like, you have like a soccer team in Montreal, right?
Basically.
Is there any major sports there other than that?
I'm not the person to ask, but no, not that I can think of, but you know, somebody in the comments, feel free to let me know, other than, you know, the Canadians, obviously, but like that's a religion and less than a sport.
Oh, I forgot the Canadians. Yeah. Montreal Canadiens. But more importantly, we're filming this on Saturday, May 13th. After last night was Friday, May 12th, which for me was a day I'm going to celebrate for a while, because that was the day that my beloved, I don't know that I would say the Lakers are my beloved. I would say LeBron is my beloved, but I am a Cavs fan and a LeBron fan. So by proxy, I'm a Lakers fan. My Lakers beat Jeremy's Warriors last night in one of the most brutal game, like just blew them out in like the way the Warriors usually blow people out, like 122-101.
The Lakers are now the winners of the California State Championship. And by that, I mean the Western Conference playoffs.
They still have to go through Denver, though. They still have to beat. They still have the Western Conference Finals, which start.
Well, yeah, but they won the California State.
They did win the California Finals, because there were like what, four teams from California that made it to the playoffs this year. Sacramento Kings, Golden State Warriors, and both LA teams, and you know, the Clippers aren't very good, but that's not their fault. But yes, the Lakers will be tomorrow night taking on the Denver Nuggets, and I'm very excited to watch Jokic play no defense and watch AD play all the defense. And did you see how many rebounds AD had in that game last night, Jeremy?
Yeah, he had like 9 in the first quarter, and I had already turned my brain off because I knew how that game was starting to go.
Anthony Davis, here was his stat line. At the end of the game, 40 minutes played, which is nuts. That's nearly the entire game. He was 5 for 9 from 5 for 9 shooting, 7 of 10 from the free throw line, 3 offensive rebounds, 17 defensive rebounds, totaling 20 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, a plus minus of 31 with 17 points. Like, that's good day. And everybody going into this game was talking about how LeBron was old and you can't expect a 30-point game out of him. And he played all 43 minutes. And guess what he had last night? A 30-point game.
It was 30 points, yeah.
Literally, the worst thing you can do in sports is to taunt LeBron. That is the worst thing you could ever possibly do, and people continue to do it, and I don't understand it, because it never works out for them. But anyway, regular listeners of the show will know that this time of year, I love the NBA playoffs. I love watching basketball this time of year specifically, and I know there's hockey, Pongo, but we're a baseball fam or basketball family, so you know, not that there's anything wrong with baseball or hockey.
There's so many things wrong with baseball, but anyway, let's not get into it. Yeah,
do we need to do the baseball rant episode?
Yeah,
stairs. We're now a sports podcast. The Mind Sculptors sports podcast. I love it. So this set that we are reviewing is a 50 card set, which is do we want to get the rant out of the way about why March of the Machine, the Aftermath, is a weird product in general? Because it's just like 50 extra cards that feel like. Like, I don't, the set feels weird. Like,
it feels like they didn't want to commit to just a whole second set, but like, probably they should have just made a whole second set. Like, and I think that this is like a big enough event in the story that they probably could have done like the three sets.
Yeah.
Must not have wanted it to like keep going for a long while and like feel that we actually had a conclusion.
Yeah, except that I feel like the upcoming sets are still going to have, like, I mean, one would expect that there's still going to be the repercussions.
I mean, they already talked about how when we were at the panel in Minneapolis and they were talking about the Wilds of Eldraine, they were talking about that whole story is like kind of centered around the like effects of what is going on in Eldraine after the Phyrexian invasion, and the entire conflict is like started because of that,
right?
So it's just like, I don't know. Listen, so like,
theoretically, like, we didn't need this set, and like, we could have just kind of skipped directly into like the aftermath through visiting different planes. But I guess, you know, this 50 card set kind of gives us a little sneak peek at like all these different planes at once, but.
Yeah, that was the one thing I will say. I do think it's kind of neat. I do think this could have just been like a core set almost.
Yeah, I agree.
It's weird that it came out very quickly after the after March of the Machines.
Like less than a month.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thought.
It feels like a DLC almost. Like, it just feels like the true ending almost. You know how like a lot of like video games, it's like have their true endings locked behind DLC. This feels like that to me, where it's just like, you know, here's
50 even more cards, story, but, and we didn't finish the story in the actual set, so here's the rest of the story.
It's like Wizards shipped an incomplete game and then needed to patch it after the fact.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, here's so those didn't get into the packs, here's 50 more cards. So because of that, there's not a ton of stuff to talk about, but we did find seven cards that are pretty interesting. Not maybe the most interesting cards you've ever heard of, but I think we've got five commanders here, or five legendary creatures at least, that are pretty interesting and have some potential. And then we've got a couple spells here as well. And so let's go ahead and start off with, in the sorcery section, Reckless Handling, which is a colorless and a red sorcery that reads, search your library for an artifact card, reveal it, put it into your hand, shuffle, then discard a card at random. if an artifact card was discarded this way, reckless handling deals 2 damage to each opponent. First of all, in the story, this is, I don't know who, if you're not aware or not, but the art is depicting Nahiri accidentally shattering the hedron that contained her spark. So that is a thing that's interesting. I'm very interested in, from a story perspective, to see if Nahiri goes down the Obnixilis path of trying to like fuck somebody up and steal their spark, because she very much feels like somebody who would want her spark back, even though she is committed to being Zendikar's guardian from Planeswalkers. But anyway, Pongo, we've got a bona fide 2-mana search your library for a bona fide 2-mana tutor in red. What do we think about this card?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty cool with the power level of this card, just generally speaking. Printing new tutors is obviously always kind of a risky thing for Wizards to be doing. Yeah, like, and they've kind of shied away from printing like tutors that are too powerful in sort of recent times. So I think this really hits a pretty reasonable power level. It's kind of like a fixed gamble. I think that it gives Red a tool that it wanted, importantly. The ability to tutor for an artifact feels very Red. We've had a few examples of that in the past, you know, like with Goblin Engineer, for example, kind of setting precedent for that. And, you know, it does it in a very Red way, where, you know, you're kind of like gambling again on the result. So it's a good tool for low color red decks to have. There are some red decks, you know, where you could see yourself wanting to combo with an artifact, for example, something like a Cloudstone Curio, where that might be an important enough part of your strategy that you would want an additional piece of functional density or redundancy, and it's at a reasonable mana cost. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to play it in like higher color decks with access to more and better tutors, but for low color decks, slam dunk. Like, really glad to have this card.
An interesting line of text on this that I just kind of processed was, it's not if you discard the card that you tutored for.
Right.
If you just discard an artifact card, it deals 2 damage. So like Phoenix, we were talking about this a little bit pre-show. This is almost sort of it's almost like a gamble with like a little bit, not quite a gamble because you can't get anything, but it's kind of got a little bit of upside attached to it.
If you squint, you could kill somebody with this in Breach. It takes a lot of cards, but technically that's a thing. And
if
that's
you were
relevant.
Doing some kind of, you know, like Twister or Endurance based loop, then yeah, that's certainly an option.
Team or deck being on your tutor also being a win con is actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I think that this card, roughly, my thoughts is that this is maybe the best tutor we've gotten since like Search for Glory that I can think of. And I think it's about in the same realm of
maybe with the exception of Battle for Ikoria. But basically, you know, that's green, just getting green.
I mean, Invasion tutors, of right? Ikoria.
Invasion How of Ikoria. You? Yeah. The battle. Known as Invasion by Korea.
The Siege.
I think I would expect to see it about as much as I see Search for Glory, which I see every once in a while.
Like, this feels really good in Godo, right? Like, really good in, like, basically every mono red deck. I can't think of a single mono red deck that doesn't want this card.
Is it good in Godo? I mean, I think there's probably a discussion to be had there, just because Godo is the tutor, right? I know Godo has kind of started playing the Cloudstone Curio lines now.
So maybe, well, I think it depends on what you're... I don't know that you're gambling for your helm with, or your rec, no, your you're tutoring for your helm, or to. Your words are hard. I don't know that you're tutoring for your helm of the host with this.
But what else do you want, right? Like, other than maybe Cloudstone Curio. Or yeah, Cursed Mirror. Like, theoretically, it's for your backup lines, right? Which I don't know if, like, deck ends up being optimal if you're playing cards like this that only really slot into your backup line. But, you know, conceivably in, like, Magda, Magda kind of has the same problem where Magda is the tutor.
Right.
But, like, perhaps there's utility artifacts there that might help put this over the edge. But then,
so, I mean,
there are red decks where you don't have a tutor in the command zone that probably are more excited.
I mean, it could do a lot of things, like you had said, Phoenix. Like, it can get the Cursed Mirror. You can get it to get like either a defense grid or Conqueror's Flail. I'm just looking at the Godo deck list, and I'm like, there's a lot. Like, I think a really good example actually is you could like use it to go get a Panharmonicon, which does set up a win. So like that is one of the things that, there's enough utility that I'm like looking at this card and I'm like, I just kind of feel like it's like, I get what you're saying, but I do think it's like good enough that you maybe take out Wheel of Misfortune for this. Right. Like I think it's just good enough to be playable. In Godo. Now, I think in other, like, I think this is a slam dunk in Burgi. I think it's a slam dunk in Magda. Like, hell, it's probably a slam dunk in, like, even Is It decks. Like,
Searches for Top.
Yeah, like, it does so much. I feel like Joyra, obviously, this is a slam dunk.
Joyra, like, yeah, I can see that.
This feels like a really good card. I didn't really look at this set too in depth until we were making the list for the set. And there were a couple of cards that like stood out to me where I was like, oh damn, that's like actually kind of good. And this was one of them.
Yeah, it has its niche for sure. Yeah. I don't know if, again, I'm as optimistic about it in necessarily every red deck, but in a lot of red decks for sure.
Yeah. I mean, most red decks end up being artifact centric. So it's like,
yeah, no, you're 100% right about that.
Next card on our list is the instant on our list, which is Filter Out, which is a colorless blue that says return all non-creature, non-land permanents to their owner's hands. So, Phoenix, this is a pseudo board wipe at instant speed for 3 mana.
Maybe.
I mean, like,
maybe it's a Hercule's Recall. I mean, it's kind of hard to evaluate, which is where it's going to be tough to make any hard line on this card because it's going to be very dependent on the game and the deck you're playing. It reminds me a lot of the ways that people use like Chain of Vapor and thinking the like X spell that returns X permanents. It's like Repeal. Is that right? Repeal?
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of like Repeal, and sometimes that's played. I don't see it played a lot, and so that's where I'm kind of on the fence on this card. Where
it's better than Repeal.
It's definitely better than that. I think, I mean, I don't know about you, Pongo, but I think like in a storm, I think about storm decks in particular, and especially maybe this is your like sideboard tech or whatever. If you expect to go into like a rule of law heavy format in your storm deck, like this answers every single rule of law at the table. It also answers every single like stacks piece that isn't like a creature.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Like, it answers a lot of issues that storm decks can have. And so, like, I do think this is and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I do think this is a card that's like the 101 or 102 card where it's like, if you think you're going into a particular meta, this is going to be a really good card in, you know, rule of law heavy formats where this just deals with a lot of stuff all at once.
It reminds me a lot of Chain of Vapor in those Stormish style decks where it's your go-to default answer. This is maybe answer number 3 or 4, but it reminds me a lot of the ways that those decks like to use Chain of Vapor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's an argument to be made that it might be the strongest card in the set. And I think probably a pretty decent argument for that. That being said, I'm not sure that it will see like widespread play in like the sort of 4+ color pile type deck.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of the cards that comes to mind when I look at it is Rebuild, which is a card that people used to play some time ago, which is 3 mana. 2 and a blue.
That cycles.
Yeah, it's an instant, and you return all artifacts to the owner's hands. So this is a little bit stronger from the perspective of, you know, it hits enchantments as well. And so, like, it does have applications beyond just removing, like, Null Rod. You know, obviously, you can remove the rule of laws as well. I think, you know, the biggest sort of downside of the card is that it misses the creature based stacks, and creature based stacks are such a huge part of the metagame, where it feels hard to look at this as being your kind of like catch all like pseudo like Cyclonic Rift type card, you know, that like right. really just bails you out. You know, that being said, it does reset all of your mana rocks so that you can replay them, you know, resets people's Rhystic Studies so that like you can rebuild through the Rhystic Study, or you can try to like go off through the Rhystic Study. You can bounce a bunch of, you know, non-creature based stacks, you know, EOT and then untap, you know, right. play a bunch of rocks, you know, but there's like give and take, like on sort of like multiple axes here, right? Because if you lose like your Mox Diamond, maybe you don't have a land to pitch to it. You lose your Chrome Mox, maybe you don't have another, you know, spell to pitch to the Chrome Mox. You know, if you pick up two mana rocks, then like those are rarely going to be mana positive. So you really want to be picking up your Mana Crypt, your Soul Ring, and your Mana Vault. Those are right. kind of like the ones that you really want to pick up. You know, certainly the power level is there. It's just that it's kind of awkward in a variety of different places and along a variety of different dimensions, where it's, I think, not a slam dunk anywhere that I can kind of think of off the yeah. top of my head, perhaps with the exception of like in the Joyra. You know,
this set yeah. in the last set had a lot of like, hey, if you're playing Joyra, this is a pretty good card,
right?
Type of stuff,
right? So, but I think that, you know, theoretically, it's still the strongest card in the set, just because mm-hmm. that effect is so powerful. Like the ceiling of that effect is so powerful.
Yeah,
seems great in Urza too.
Yeah, that's a place where you could see it. Certainly, I mean, because you can float a bunch of mana, pick a bunch of rocks, and replay them pretty easily, and kind of set everybody back in terms of mana, and then. The issue there again is that theoretically, no, I guess it's not so much of an issue. I was going to say, you know, it resets some of your stacks pieces like your Static Orb and stuff like that, but you just replay them. Like, that's the thing with Urza yeah. is you always have such a massive advantage, mana advantage, if you're in good shape, right? If you're not losing, you're usually so massively ahead that something like this can be really backbreaking if people were relying on their mana rocks.
Making people replay stuff in like a three ball or Static Orb seems brutal.
Or if you just have the Winter Orb out and like, you know, people were untapping a bunch of rocks to play through that. Yeah, this could devastate them.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking, is it just feels like a good answer to maybe not every stack stack, but it definitely feels like it's a good answer to a big variety of stack stacks.
It's just interesting because it's kind of a bit of this and a bit of that, right? Like,
right.
At different times, like sometimes it can be almost like a Culling Ritual, not as powerful as Culling Ritual, but like it can kind of do a bit of that kind of impersonation.
Well, and I mean, Culling Ritual times, has that same issue though, right? Like Culling Ritual is as good as however many things it can destroy are.
Culling Ritual is just a nonsensical magic card. Like, it's
also, it eats creatures. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, it's just a messed up card.
That's kind of my point.
This is not
though,
exactly
like, is
that. It's got elements of that, and then it's got elements right. of, you know, other type of effects that we've seen. So it's interesting.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting card. It'll be interesting. It definitely will see play in Urza. It will definitely see play in Joyra and
not sure outside of that.
Mizzix might be interested in that, maybe. There's some stuff, but anyhow, moving on to, we have five legendary creatures that we are going to be talking about. And the first one of those five is Nissa, Resurgent Animist. That is correct. Nissa has lost her spark for a little bit. It is implied in the story that she might get it back. So that's like the whole them losing their sparks thing. It's like really funny for me because to read the story and also kind of see how some of the characters react to it, because Nissa, this is the first time losing her spark, right? She's never lost it before, but characters like Ob, Karn, and Teferi are just like, yeah, this is a Tuesday.
it's multiversal war. We lost our sparks anyways.
All right. Well.
First time?
Damn. It really is like the first time meme. Like, it's just.
Yep.
They're just kind of sitting here like, yeah, whatever. And Omnixilis was like, I was kind of comfortable in New Capenna anyway. But we have Nissa, Research Animist, which has a land is a 3/3 for two colorless in a green. Her creature types are Elf Scout and has the landfall ability of whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, add one mana of any color. Then, if this is the second time this ability has resolved this turn, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal an elf or elemental card. Put that card into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So, Pongo, this is kind of like a fixed Omnath or a powered up Lotus Cobra, depending on which way you want to look at it. Like, it has elements, obviously it has very direct comparison to Lotus Cobra. But I right. also do think it has like a little bit of that Omnath ability to it, because it does have that. If this is the second time this is triggered, then it does a this and another thing. So it's like it has a little bit of that going on, too. So this card is something that's interesting because we've talked about it as a commander. We've talked about it in the 99. What are your thoughts on this card?
Yeah, I mean, certainly very interesting card. We were talking about this a bit before the show. Where this is not like an immediate slam dunk into, you know, like your average CEDH deck, but there's right. like a lot of like interesting nuance here, where like, you know, at first blush, as I was saying, you might pass this card off, but then you read into it a little bit more and it's kind of like, wow, okay, actually, you know, maybe this actually fits into a few more places than I previously thought. So the Lotus Cobra, comparison is obviously a good one. And there are certain commanders historically that have cared a lot about Lotus Cobra. You know, notable ones that come to mind would be something like a Hullin, where, you know, like putting a land into play, getting a mana, and then theoretically putting that land back into your hand, having it bounce back to your hand by some effect, where, you know, you can use the floating mana to then play a creature and put the land back into play, blah, 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 you know, kind of get up to doing some weird shenanigans that. Through those kinds of loops, you know, is kind of always a thing, or just otherwise, you know, making a lot of mana. And this has the sort of secondary benefit of, you know, you crack a fetch land and now you've also drawn a card as an elf or an elemental. And so obviously, like down the line, that can turn into even more value with Hullin. So like there's kind of like some value ball potential there. Another deck that has kind of cared about Lotus Cobra type effects would be like the Kodama Sakashima style decks. Where like some of your loops, if you have both Kodama and Sakashima copying Kodama, if you play a bounce land, you can stack the triggers so that you bounce the land back to your hand and then replay the land. And then, you know, you kind of just keep replaying the same land, and you can make infinite mana. If you've got a Lotus Cobra in play, this does the same thing. And then right. theoretically also puts, you know, an elf or an elemental into your hand, which, you know, depending on what elves you're playing, you know, could either just be a mana dork. But if you're playing, you know, some more powerful elementals, could also be like an outlet of sorts. And theoretically, you know, there's, you know, one particular elemental that immediately springs to mind that is really it's interesting called Titania. To think about. Not the one I was thinking of, but that's another one. There's a Shaya, which is a really, really important piece in a lot of green decks and is an elemental. And obviously, you know, fitting with it being Nissa here. And so being able to theoretically tutor up a Shaya, in certain decks, you know, where maybe you're not playing any other elves or Quirion Ranger, if that's like your other yeah. elf, and that's obviously goes hand in hand with the Shaya, can be really, really powerful as well. You know, getting the Lotus Cobra effect, but then also theoretically being able to tutor up a combo piece is really cool. You know, again, this is not going to fit into, I think, every green deck, like your Yasans and stuff like that. I could be wrong about that, but I'm not convinced necessarily, especially if they weren't playing Lotus Cobra before or Tireless Tracker, like those types of effect, Tireless Provisioner. But there's like enough interesting text here where I could see it having a home. You know, I'm not, you know.
Oh, that's really annoying.
What?
Yes. I'm reading this card and I'm like, I'm thinking about it because I talked about the Omnath comparison a little bit. And I'm like, oh, this is cracked as fuck in four color money pile. Because all of your, because both Solitude and Endurance are elementals. Omnath is an elemental. And then, what is it? Nissa is an elemental. Holy shit. What's the over under this gets like, banned in modern?
This card has a lot of relevant text on it.
Yeah.
It's many formats.
It's really like a very kind of more nuanced card than, like I was saying, you would think it just looking at it initially. And I hadn't even considered the pitch elementals, but it's true. Like, you could play this, you know, maybe as a three drop, it's too much to be playing in modern so that you can then do the, you know, the cute thing. But I could be wrong about that. And obviously, I mean, in Pioneer, like, you could play it, right?
It curves really well into play because you're already kind of just going land drop and like control stuff in money pile. And so it like curves fairly well into play Nissa land or play like Polluted Delta crack, get a, you know, Triome or some shit.
Yeah. And then so this is a four hand. Drop, right? Because you want to.
No,
play it's a four
a
drop in the sense that you want to play a land.
Oh, like, sure.
After. So like when you're curving out with it.
Sure. Sure.
Ideally, you play.
But even on turn four, even if you play it turn three pass, get to turn four. You are, it still like puts that card into your hand really, really well. So it just like, it curves really well. I feel like
the problem is it's a three. If you play it as a three drop, you run the risk of not getting any value off of it. Right. And it is in the range where it dies to bolt. So that's kind
it
of
also means
I'm
you can't play
from.
Kahira as your companion, but
yeah, for obviously non CEDH formats where like you're thinking about curving out with it and you're just looking at, you know, like sort of like grindier style of magic where like your cards kind of need to generate immediate value.
This feels like this might not be okay in Pioneer.
Well, that's exactly like when you brought up Modern, my mind immediately went to Pioneer actually, or when you brought up the pitch elementals and just kind of the Omnath style of synergies. So yeah, no, I hadn't thought about that even before you brought that up, but now I'm
just looking at like five color midrange in,
it's mana, it's mana fixing,
Pioneer,
right?
Like, it mana fixes that deck. Yeah. It just is like, oh, that feels like that's going to cause problems in Pioneer.
Yeah, it's an interesting card in any case.
I mean, like, Fable of the Mirror Breaker is already like causing problems in every format. So
I'm going to talk about how it's
interesting. It's almost like
it's
the green
Fable.
It kind of
does the Magda thing.
Yeah.
It kind of does the Magda thing as a commander. The general consensus I've heard from people that have tried to make it work so far is that it's not good enough. But you can play the only elves and elementals in your deck are a Shaya, Quirion Ranger, and then something that draws cards. So like
that's so awkward Beast with Whisper. The three mana commander though to not play the mana dorks.
And then,
like,
but you still
play no mana dorks.
I don't know that it means you don't get to play any mana dorks because you still get birds. You still
there's
get
a couple.
You still get
you get the new one from Lord of the
Rings.
Oh
yeah, the half.
That's true.
That comes out.
The good one. The
that
best
is a good one.
But
like, consider that in mono green, you're not getting the hierarchs. You're not getting any of the off color dorks. Like, and yeah. When you think about mono green, actually, your mana dorks.
Yeah.
You actually get fewer than you would think.
But yeah, it is a deck that if you see someone sit down with it at the table, it will do the Magda thing, tutor for an Ashaya, and then only play creatures and then win the game.
Yeah.
So it's something to watch out for, but I don't think it's amazing.
Thinking that mono green might be a little underplayed right now, because my experience of playing it recently has been, this does a lot of stuff that is very good. If you watch Team Turn 3, don't be surprised if I just show up with Yisan.
I think mono green, though, kind of it's interesting because I don't think it's necessarily good in the like broader CEDH meta, but it might be good, particularly in like the Team Turn 3 meta, because we play a lot more of mid-range style decks. Like turbo style decks are like a bit of its blind spot, because like what tools do you end up having to deal with those? You pretty much like maybe Root Maze if you're playing it, and then like Collector Roof. And if you're playing like a few of the other really niche like kind of interactive pieces, then like maybe, but like you're really kind of hoping to like leverage other people playing stacks or like other people playing mid range so that you can also have like a bit of time to really deploy your pieces.
Right.
So I don't think you're wrong in the sense that if you look at like what people play like Reed and Morgan, mm-hmm. like maybe a mono green deck could actually perform well in that setting, but I don't know that I would want to play it into like a tournament setting.
I don't know. I've been enjoying playing mono green a lot recently, and playing the almost CEDH version of Titania. I'm like, I think I just want to build Yisan. So I might put Yisan together because I've been enjoying playing mono green a lot.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to It's Time for Your Favorite Game Show. Is this a Najila card? This week's contestant is one Samut, Vizier of Noctamoon. It is a 2/3 human warrior cleric that costs a colorless red and a green. And it has first strike, vigilance, and haste, which is nuts. And also has the ability, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, if that creature entered the battlefield this turn, draw a card. So, the two Najila experts, I ask you, is this a Najila card? Phoenix, what are your thoughts? We talked about this a little bit while we were in Minneapolis. What do you think about this card?
Yes, probably.
It's
put it very simply. My initial evaluation of it is it's on par with something like Rite of Harmony, which I played for a while and then eventually ended up cutting just because it was just barely not there. And if it's in that range, it's worth testing. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to hold off my this is good enough or not good enough until I've actually played it, but it draws a card off of itself when it comes in. It's got a very nice stat line. It's got a bunch of keywords. It works without Najila being out, at least somewhat.
It draws a card. Yeah.
I mean, it's like Toski, but better, right? Like,
not better, different.
It's not strictly better than Toski, but I think in practice it will often be better than Toski.
That's kind of my thought, yeah. Is because yeah. Like it does, it's a little bit more in line with what Najila wants to do.
Yeah, so I'm perhaps less optimistic than Phoenix, but I am pretty excited about this card, and I do plan on testing it. So for me, you know, if Phoenix was like kind of an enthusiastic yes, I'm kind of more of like a maybe. I do like the card a lot. Phoenix highlighted like a lot of the strengths in the sense that like you know, it's like a book Like it's got three keywords, and all of those keywords are relevant for Najeela. Haste in particular is always something Najeela loves to see. But Vigilance is sick on a 2/3 because it hits that sweet spot of like it has enough toughness to block Timna and enough power to kill
and
Timna.
Has first strike.
And it has first strike. So like if something is like a 3/2 swings in at you, you can block it pretty safely. Grim Hireling comes to mind, but I don't know, you know,
or somebody else's Najeela.
Theoretically. Yeah. So obviously the really interesting bit is not that this is, you know, a cleric or that it has keywords.
Hey, concerted.
Yeah. Defense. Concerted defense maybe makes a comeback. obviously this is a cleric because I think it was maybe the last hurrah of like trying to support the party mechanic. The interesting bit here is, you know, how powerful of a value engine is this for Najeela? And I think Phoenix, you're 100% right to bring up Rite of Harmony. That's like maybe one of the more obvious comparisons. There's a few other comparisons that I can get into, but we can talk about that one. Rite of Harmony obviously is like more efficient, 2 mana, instant speed, blah, 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 blah. But sort of has like the notable downside, I think, of being slower than Samit. In the sense that like in some situations Rite of Harmony played on turn 3 is just a draw 1 for 2 mana because that's like the first turn you swing with Najeela, or even like on turn 2 if you had a turn 1 Najeela, it's just a draw 1, maybe you draw a Mana Dork after, or like a, you know, like a Mystic Remora, and then it's like a draw 2. And you know, like there have been situations where I've really snowballed like with the Rite of Harmony effect active, but it's a bit inconsistent in that respect, so it never kind of really made the cut ultimately. But this is really interesting because it's warrior, it comes down after Najeela, so when it comes down after Najeela it immediately draws 3 for 3 mana, and that's actually a pretty good rate. The 3 mana draw 3 that like then converts into potentially drawing additional cards across like the subsequent turns.
I think the fact that it's a permanent effect that sticks around is what, in my mind, puts it above Rite of Harmony.
Well, Rite of Harmony can be replayed, right? So,
well, sure, but like I think the fact that it's a spell, not a permanent,
right?
Is why I like Samit more and think that it is more it is closer to playable than Rite of Harmony.
I think the big reason is the same reason why like any warrior, you know, and like why the first additional warrior you play in Najeela is really powerful, because when you play that first additional warrior, every single one takes a turn off of Najeela's combat clock. The first one beyond that point, it's, you know, less
negligible
beneficial, in terms of, you know, the amount of turns it takes to win, to complete combat, or I should say to take down the table. So curving out with Samit is going to be so much more powerful than curving out with Rite of Harmony. However, the floor of Samit is pretty low. And that's historically been the issue with a lot of kind of the Najeela-centric value engines, which is, you know, if Najeela, it can't be played because of Adranith Magistrate, or if she gets removed, then, you know, this essentially cantrips and is, you know, some keywords that you don't particularly care about without Najeela out, other than as like a potential Timna blocker. So that's notably a downside, and Rite of Harmony, you know, obviously isn't great in that spot either, but can be a bit better in certain situations where, you know, if you have happened to, you know, play out a Mana Dork, you know, you draw another card, you play you know, like a Ristic Study or something like that, you've now drawn 2 cards. You know, in practice, probably that doesn't happen a ton. So I would think that Samit probably is just going to generally be better than Rite of Harmony on average. You know, I'm excited.
I mean, I would play this before I would play Toski personally.
Yeah, well, I mean,
like, I just think this is, you're
going to be curving, I mean, in my out, opinion, right? Najeela, right? Often like turn 2, let's say if you had acceleration turn 1 and then Toski after. And Toski in that situation will draw only, you know, 2 cards, and then stick around, hopefully. But this will draw 3 cards in that spot, and it also accelerates, you know, your token production. It makes it so that it's relatively trivial to actually combo off with Najeela on the subsequent turn, like kind of regardless of like what blockers somebody might have. You just kind of slam down, you know, a Derevi after.
You have six attackers.
Yeah, you're going to have a ton of attackers. You know, another sort of small incidental thing that people don't really think about, but that, you know, can be relevant is first strike is a really, really sort of secretly powerful keyword with Najeela, because like,
You could just stop at secretly powerful keyword and you would be
But with Najeela in particular, because you know, if you look at like the Nature's Will or Grim Hireling type win cons, it's first strike gives you an extra opponent, basically is kind of what it boils down to, because you have first strike damage, you get a Grim Hireling trigger, and then in regular combat damage you can get an additional Grim Hireling trigger from the same opponent that you're attacking,
right?
And that can be super relevant, because that means that like, oh, okay, now I only need like two opponents that are open, and I can combo that way. So like, there's a lot here to like. You know, what really remains to be seen is whether or not like any Najeela centric win or value engine is really worth playing. You know, if you look at something like Professional Facebreaker, why did like make the cut in the past? Well, it's because you know, you don't need Najeela out for it to do its thing. You have a couple of attackers, you have it, you can still make treasures with it. So even if Najeela gets removed, well, it's still, you know, a card that other decks in the format play, even without the warrior synergy. And, you know, you can sacrifice the treasures to it, to exile cards, to draw cards. I think that the ceiling of Samet is so much higher in Najeela, but the floor is a lot lower. So, you know, remains to be seen where the sort of average case is for this card. You know, a lot of people are already talking about like, oh, I drew three cards off of it after I curved out with it. And, you know, I've goldfished also drawing three cards, you know, this coming down the turn after Najeela. And that feels great. But like, you know, the amount of times where it's been like, oh, okay, there's a Dranith Magistrate out, my Samet is in hand, like it's going to draw me a card and then do nothing for a little while, kind of, you know.
Yeah,
it's easy to try to, you know, kind of sweep those under the rug and be like, well, whatever, you know, there was a Dranith Magistrate out, that game was messed up. But Dranith Magistrate is such an omnipresent force in the meta that, like, you know, it's been you know, one of the major challenges for decks like Najeela, you know, trying to do commander centric things you know, for the past year plus, right? As more and more people just say like, okay, well, I have to play Dranith Magistrate, even if it's like not proactive whatsoever, because people like to call it like a mole con, right? Like a mole win con, you kind of mole to it to win, because there are certain pods where you literally play it on turn one or two and like you just win that pod. So it's
I think one thing we haven't talked about is as a commander, I think there's an interesting green-red deck here. I would have a hard time justifying it over the new Minsk and Boo.
Yeah.
I just think Minsk and Boo is just dumb things. Having that sac outlet in the command zone, I think, is just so good.
It's an infinite mana outlet in the command zone, too. So
yeah, like, I think that's hard to... At minimum, I like that there are more, like, good red-green commanders available now. You know what I mean? Like, because for a really long time, it was just like, okay, so you have Borg Borygmos. What else do you have? We have Borg Borygmos. And now it feels like there's a more of a wider variety of things that you can be doing in Gruul. And I definitely appreciate that. It's not my particular flavor of Magic, but I personally think that Samu has like a lot of, I think it is as people are trying to, because I've, you know, as I watch the people who are on these like NBC versions of Najeela slowly kind of drift back towards the tempo pile, I think that this card fits in that shell really well. Because it kind of does a lot of that like mid-rangey game plan that you want to be doing, as well as like kind of like being almost a peer depending on where you're at in the game. So like I just think it's, I think it's floor on its own of being here is a card, you draw a card, is good enough to already be like at minimum playable But I think its ceiling is just so fucking high that you can't not, like, I just think it's an auto include in my opinion, but
so it's a cool one to have in the toolbox. Yeah. There are certain pods where people are just like, oh yeah, Najeela, whatever. It's fine. Like, we're on a clock, but like, I'm going to try to race Najeela, and you know, to be able to expend a creature tutor and be like, okay, I can spend this creature tutor to find like a draw 7, but like not a symmetrical one is pretty sick.
I mean, yeah. Like, and
it has killed all thoughts I've ever had of including Edric again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would be where I'm at with it.
That's fair.
It's so good. I'm very, very, very into this card. Maybe I'll play Najeela again. No, I can't. I can't put team turn 3 through that again. We can't go back to having multiple Najeela decks on stream at the same time. It's just, it's not tenable.
Did somebody give you a talking to? It's yeah.
Next commander on our list is Narset Enlightened Exile. Narset, it costs 1 and Jeskai. Human monk that is a 3/4 that says creatures you control have prowess, which is a very... I like that they worded it this way because it's kind of going back to that old school wording of, instead of saying this has prowess and other creatures you control has prowess, it just says creatures you control have prowess. I really like that it went back to that templating because I think that's a little bit cleaner. But it also has the ability of whenever Narset attacks, exile target non-creature, non-land card with mana value less than Narset's power from a graveyard and copy it. You may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. So, Pongo, this card as a commander is like an interesting Jeskai deck, in my opinion. Like, it has some interesting things going on for it. It's kind of the prowess aspect of it is what makes it like really interesting. Because like you're able to like exile some like heinous shit from that, right? Like you can get
any graveyard.
Yeah, and it's any graveyard. Yeah, so it's just like it.
No,
it checks a lot of boxes.
For sure. There's like I think this is gonna be surprising to a lot of people because I think like not going to appear that good on the surface. To many and like, you know, maybe somebody rolls up with this to a pod at an event and you're just like, oh yeah, whatever, I don't respect that deck, whatever, it's yeah, I'm gonna ignore it for the most part. It's Jeskai and it's like a commander that you know, he does nothing when it enters the battlefield and then you know needs to attack, but you know, like, and that's all true, right? Like, as sort of the base case of this card, you know, you look at it and it's not great, but then there will be situations where it's like, oh okay, like they bounced my blocker.
They counter your Gnaws, and then they just cast your Gnaws.
Or you know, they just like you had a failed breach attempt, and like they play your Underworld Breach, and like they managed to cobble something together. Where you demonic, tutor.
They can play your Breach.
Well, yeah, exactly. You demonic tutored at some point early in the game, and like now they're gonna play your demonic tutor. You know, there are issues there, right? Like obviously you do need to have enough prowess, like. So you need to play 2 spells to cast something like a Gnaws, right?
It's not hard,
You need to play 3 spells. It's not that hard, but by the time Narset comes down, you might have spent like all of your mana rocks in hand. You might not have, you know, a ton to trigger prowess with. I mean, we'll see. And the other issue is that if there's something like truly heinous in a graveyard, you know, people can block it. And it doesn't have any evasion, right?
It's an attack trigger. It doesn't matter.
I do have to know.
Oh, it's an attack trigger, right?
Yeah. The way that it is worded as well. Yeah,
I thought it was a
damage. It doesn't actually work with the extra combat spells very well, or at least most of them, because it casts right away. So most of the extra combat spells don't work when you're in the declare attackers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them have to be like during a main phase, and then it will create another combat.
Oh,
there's at least like 2 or 3. There's a 2 or 3 that will work, sure.
but it's okay because you know you can play extra turn spells if you really wanted to. Instead, you know, it's not quite the original Narset in that respect, but like
I don't know that you want to play turn spells though because it exiles them, and I think this is like a attack and you win type of deck, in my opinion. Like,
yeah.
That's what it reads to me, at least.
So it doesn't have like the same, obviously, like you're milling your deck effect as Gnar said. Mm-hmm. So you're like finding more cards and you want to keep going, so that you can keep finding more cards, cast all those cards, eventually find to enter the infinite and do like God knows whatever. So you're right that it's like a little bit different, and so probably you are hoping to cast somebody's really big impactful spell to kind of shore up the slightly less good card quality in Jeskai. But you know, I mean, Jeskai's card quality is still quite good. It's just you're missing like the tutors. But you know, it just so happens that like people at some point, you know, will probably play their demonic tutor or their vampiric tutor earlier right. on, or their imperial seal. So like you'll have options to set up, you know, something. I don't know that it's going to be as strong as some of the more like combo centric or combo piece type Jeskai commanders that will probably be a little bit more consistent. But I think it's going to catch people off guard at times.
Yeah, I think both of the lines of text make me immediately think that like this is a very solid like controlling deck with a finisher in the command zone, whatever that finisher ends up being. But
yeah,
I mean, it plays very much along the lines of like how I've said like Jeskai wants to play, which is the you play control and then just when you find your window, you win. And this definitely plays on that axis very well. But it also feels like a deck where you can also build it potentially so that it's in it. You literally just attack with it once and win the game. So it does have that potential to it. I don't know that that's the best way to build it.
I think it's going to be tough to do that consistently, right?
That's what I'm saying is it's like, I don't know that that is the way I would build it. And I don't know that that is the best way to build it, but it definitely feels like it's a deck that basically why I'm saying that is it's going to be a deck that when you see, if you sit down at a tournament and you see it, you need to respect it because it very easily can just swing and win.
It can turn the corner pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, it is going to be able to go over the top really quick. Especially if there's anything even mildly relevant in a graveyard. Like honestly, if there is a breach in a graveyard, that might be enough to put it over the top. Because like, then what do I have to go do? Find intuition? Oh, well, great. I'm in Jeskai. Perfect colors to do that. So it's like, I think this deck has a lot of potential. I play a lot of Jeskai. I feel like of the three of us, I play Jeskai probably the most. And I think that like of all the Jeskai commanders, I still think
it's not Jeskai Ishai, but it's a similar style.
I think it's a little bit better than Elsha. Not gonna lie, I do because I think the biggest problem that Elsha runs into is that Elsha's win con in the way you kind of want to play Elsha. Kind of, it's the way Elsha wants you to play, and then the way the Jeskai card pool is designed butt heads against each other because like. Jeskai is the card pool. I've talked about this a lot before, but Jeskai is a very natural control shell. And so like Elsha kind of encourages you to be a storm deck and Jeskai doesn't do storm particularly well. It doesn't do it poorly, but like adding white to that, like your color pool kind of makes you a little bit more controlly. So like, I just think that this turns the corner a lot easier than Elsha does because Elsha runs that issue of like, oh, if there's a Grafdigger's Cage, fuck. If there's a this, fuck. Like this gets around Soulless Jailer. This gets around like literally all of those hate pieces. Yes, it does because
Soulless Jailer.
You make a copy and you exile it.
Oh, wow.
And you are making a copy of the exiled card.
And you cast the copy.
Yeah, that's right. You're casting a copy of it. It gets around all of that stuff, so it doesn't care. So you can play Cage, you can play Soulless Jailer, you can play all of that shit and just get around it because you don't care about it. Like, this does sort like, it's almost like Greasefang in that way, where like Greasefang could play all the graveyard hate and then just not care about it because it doesn't animate creatures. So it's like you have a little bit of that going on here. So like,
I do think though that there's another argument, which is that it could still be weaker than other Jeskai options like Brawl and Shabraz, because like those obviously like have like one card win conditions with the commander. And you did mention a bunch of stacks, obviously, that Narset works through reasonably well. But what it doesn't work through well is Dranith Magistrate. And I think that that's, you know, the most common stack.
Why does it not work through Dranith?
You can't cast spells from anywhere but your hand.
Dranith just only cares if it's cast from hand.
You're making a copy.
But you can't cast the copy. It's the same reason why Dramatic Reversal Isochron Scepter doesn't work with a Dranith Magistrate out.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yes, but like here's the reality of it. If I'm going to start listing off the amount of commanders that get shut off because of Dranith, we're going to be here all damn day. Like, every deck in this format in some way, shape or form is turned off by Dranith being on the battlefield.
Well,
like it
yes and no, right? Like, because there are some commanders that get shut off on both sides of Dranith Magistrate.
Sure.
And then there are others where it's like, okay, if I can get in under the Dranith Magistrate, I can still do my thing. This gets shut down on both sides of Dranith Magistrate.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like Prosper. I mean, that's fair. Right? Prosper has kind of the same problem in that respect.
You just have to, like, you kind of have to remove Dranith when you're playing.
I do think that you are in colors that can play around it or deal with that reasonably well. So, like, I think that is because you're like in the best removal colors, outside of maybe like black green. So, like, Jeskai can deal with a lot of things reasonably well, like between bounce spells and Path to Exile and Winds of Abandoned and Swords to Plowshares. And I don't know. I think this has a lot of potential and I'm very high on it. And I think it's probably. I don't know that a lot of people are going to rush to build it, because I don't know that a lot of people are rushing to build Jeskai right now, because Grixis is the flavor of like that everybody's on right now. But I do think that if you are playing Jeskai colors, this is probably, if you don't want to be playing Jeskai Ishai, this is worth exploring, because I think this definitely, or more specifically, if you are part of the crew who likes the Ardenchrom, the Staxier version of Jeskai Ishai, those types of decks, this is probably a little bit better than those because of its ability to turn the corner.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that this is like secretly kind of like a four color commander, right? Mm-hmm. Just because of how often there will be like powerful black cards in people's graveyards, right? That you get to play. Another really interesting theoretical way you could build this deck would be as kind of like the Wheel Thief style of deck. Obviously you don't get to play Notion Thief, and Hole Breacher is banned now, so that kind of hurts.
And Twister isn't great. Twister's not great.
However, you could play, you know, Narset, and Alms Collector, and then you could be playing things like Goblin Lore, which then like theoretically puts, you know, powerful cards from people's hands into graveyards. You know, it's something to explore perhaps as a way to build this deck.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
I just
Nero face it right there. Right?
the problem just burning is density.
Inquiry twice on the same turn into a table and watch them.
Yeah. Play. So theoretically, the problem.
I mean, Jeskai already has like Brawl and Shabraz already does that stuff, right? Like, so this can do it in a way where it can weaponize it similarly, but maybe not as a 1-to-1 comparison, but it weaponizes it. Like you can use similar like. Play patterns to get like the different desired results, if that makes sense.
I think so. You probably need to be doing that type of stuff more disruptively with this deck, and then eventually have Narset come down to try to take advantage of the disruption. Whereas with Brawl and Shabraz, I think you get to do that stuff proactively, which is a big benefit. So anyway, it's interesting to think about.
I like control decks, and this is a fun control commander. So this is another look out for this on Team Turn 3, because this is definitely this in Zergo and Ojutai are like two commanders that I was just like, man, this was just like designed in a lab to appeal to exactly me. Like they were like, what does Cal like? Is what I think specifically they did. Anyhow, next card on the list. This is a card that I got to play against in Minneapolis a little bit because Reed had this deck built. And this is a really annoying deck to play against. This is Obnixilus, Captive Kingpin, or as Reed likes to call it, Pinkerton Ob. It is two colorless, a black and a red. 4/3 demon with flying and trample, which is the trample part is actually very relevant and really annoying. It also has the ability of whenever one or more opponents each lose exactly one life, put a +1/+1 counter on Obnixilus. Exile the top card of your library. Until your next end step, you may play that card. Hey, Phoenix.
Yeah.
So you play Prosper, right? Yeah. This feels like a card that is pretty comparable. What are your thoughts on this?
I think Prosper is amazing in the 99 of this deck. I don't know how I feel about this in the 99 of Prosper. It's a little bit tough to deal one damage in Prosper. It does, so we were talking about this in the pre-show, but it does have a four card combo in Prosper. So it'd be Prosper, this, a Mayhem Devil, and then Sensei's Divine.
So like every combo in Prosper.
So like every combo in Prosper.
Three cards, Mayhem Devil. Mayhem Devil.
It combos with Mayhem Devil and Sensei's Top. And we're already playing those cards, but... This on its own is a little bit rough when you're not built around it. It doesn't trigger very often. Mm-hmm. Prosper does get to trigger it once every time you attack with the Death Toucher, but it's not amazing.
On a four drop.
But as a commander, this is way more interesting.
It's a bananas commander. I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, it's a very good commander.
You get to play a lot of cards that make the game absolutely miserable, because if your commander's not out, you're just tracking one damage at a time.
Nether Void in this deck is quite... possibly the most annoying Magic card.
You create a lot of triggers. Imagine if every card you ever played was Rhystic Study, and they don't actually do anything until your commander's out.
Which but is a downside.
The commander's awesome. It gets great. The commander gets huge, which is great. Even if you're not casting the cards from exile, you are just your commander's getting even bigger. You punish fetch lands. Yep. You have lots of ways to trigger this a lot of
times
like and draw
all randomly a lot of things that just deal one damage to you, like your mana confluences, your City of Brasses. Like,
oh, trust me, when we were at Minneapolis, we were playing against this, and I'm sitting there playing Tivit, and I'm just like, I'm literally getting politicked into not using my mana confluence at this point, or cracking my fetch,
or activating your Talisman of Dominance.
Yeah, exactly, because we're just like. We're sitting here and I'm like, okay, I kind of need to do this thing, but I also don't want to feed Reed a card. And it's just like, it is very comparable to Rhystic Study in that regard, because like there is a lot of that. It's like a Rhystic Study that also has like a clock attached to it almost. Because
do we want to talk about the ad nauseum interaction?
I fucking
If somebody's playing Najeela and like you attack one of the opponents, the non-odd player,
rip you.
That was pretty bad.
They just draw a card for each warrior.
Every one drop you hit on ad nauseum is an individual trigger.
So
for an opponent's ad
nauseum. This an Najeela card?
Is this an Najeela card?
You know, now that you mention it, it's basically like Toski.
It's kind of, it's not that dissimilar. And it also gets big. Like, maybe I'm not even joking. I'm like only a little bit joking.
It's like the wheels are starting to spin a little bit. Like,
this actually might not be the worst.
We didn't even talk about the fact that this card has a one card combo either.
We haven't gotten to that yet. Yeah.
This is going to be a viable deck. Like, I think this does what people want Rograkh Tevish to be. Like, you know, there's all these people that play that like Rog Tevish stack. and I played against it and I'm like, eh, it's whatever. It's kind of annoying because like it's in like black red and it does some weird stuff. But ultimately, it's a little bit of turbo. It's a little bit of stacks and it doesn't feel like it does either one particularly well. This is really good at doing all of the above. And obviously, it's not a turbo deck, but like playing against it, it is one of those things where, again, like all of that incidental damage that you just kind of do where you're like, oh, well, this is just, you know, life is a resource, whatever. You're kind of actively killing yourself quite literally because you have a flying trample commander sitting across the table from you that you are making bigger and that is going to come smack you in the face. And it's just like, well, what do I do about this? And so I do think this is going to go into tournaments and be disruptive. Like this is, I think this has a lot of potential in tournament settings.
It is. So like, for example, I think the way I put it, I think technically Prosper is a stronger deck, but I think this deck is much more well positioned. There's not a lot of great justifications you could make to play Prosper in a tournament compared to just anything with more colors, but you can very easily make a justification to play this deck.
Yeah, well, having the one card win condition really helps a lot, I think.
So what is this one card win condition? Tell us about
it. It's like sort of one card. It's actually like kind of like one and a half cards, right? Yeah.
It's all will be one, the enchantment that combos with everything now, apparently. And then a single damage of any kind, a single life loss of any.
And it's all in standard too, which is hilarious.
Life. It has to be.
Of specifically one.
Yeah. It has to be an ob trigger.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So then.
And so once you do that, you put on 1/1 counters and then you exile a card. Then you put on 1/1 counter. Then it repeat.
Yeah. It deals the one damage from that point on.
Hello. So. I would like to introduce you to what is known as a loop.
Yep.
That is,
and then because it's exiling cards, you don't care if you have however many cards left in deck, it just kills the table.
Yeah, because you can't mill out and lose unless, I don't know, theoretically somebody can resolve a force you to draw effect. Seems hard, like, until we get Ancestral Recall unbanned.
Hey, listen, people are telling me Fairy Mastermind's a good card because it can make people draw, and I just, like, okay.
Whatever you said, Chief. Because it draws a ton of cards.
Yes. So this...
good deck.
Yeah, this is a good deck. Good card. I believe in this. Might be a Dingela card, actually. because it might not be... being four mana is a little bit much, but like it also just might be good. It's awkward that it exiles cards from the top of your library, which is where it's like, eh...
Yeah,
but the fact that it like does,
we didn't talk about that. It is good CFE. So generally most cards that have CFE, which is cast from exile printed on them, end up with either good CFE or bad CFE. Bad CFE is it's only the turn that you exile them, you can play them. The good CFE is you get two turns to play them, and this is the good version.
Well, this is like a combination of the good and bad, right? Because on your turn,
the it's on win the turn
cycle. Exactly.
The way that this triggers, it's the same wording as Prosper, so it's not great if you trigger it on your own turn.
Right, and you know, we're talking the context of Najeela, where like a lot of the time you're going to be triggering it in combat. That's not good. That's less good than Toski. Anyway, I mean, like, we need to stop memeing because, you know, theoretically people will think that it's actually consideration.
No, but listen, if the NBC players start playing this, maybe they'll figure out how to play Najeela correctly.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like people like Memo are doing just fine.
Memo, you're the exception. Oh, yeah. I love you, Memo. You're good. But Memo, I think has like a pretty mid-rangey list anyhow, but that's neither here nor there. Anywho, last card on our list is maybe a little bit less exciting on first glance than the last two. Definitely has some potential, though. It's Sigarda, Font of Blessings, a two colorless, a white and a green angel. That is a 4/4 with flying and says other permanents you control have hexproof. You may look at the top card of your library at any time, and you may cast angel spells and human spells from the top of your library. So we talked about this a little bit pre-show, Pongo, is that this card has a lot of weird utility because it's just like kind of does a lot of stuff you kind of want to be doing anyhow. And your permanence having hexproof is kind of good.
Yeah, it's like Shalai, but like horizontal, like not like strictly better Shalai, but like horizontal Shalai in the sense that like it's got slightly different upsides.
Right.
But like, I don't know. I really quite like the upsides here.
Yeah.
So the two that notably come to mind, you know, beyond like it has an extra point of power, other permanents instead of creatures, planeswalkers, and you, which means that the hexproof extends to your enchantments. And, you know, if you happen to be playing like a null rod, for example, like artifact based stacks, then, you know, this extends to that, which is really powerful, in my opinion, even if most of your stacks pieces are creatures. But then also, you know, you get to have like this very limited future sight type effect. And like the angel typing is restrictive, right? There's like one card that will commonly matter, which is just like Drana and Linvala, or like Linvala if you're in green white specifically, or in like, I don't know, green white red. But humans is like a really common creature type.
It's all absurdly like,
so
turns out
so theoretically, you know, rather than spending six mana to put like a bunch of +1/+1s counters on your creatures, which don't get me wrong, that is really quite often quite good.
Strong effects.
The Gavinny Township type effect, specifically in like these like win con lists, or I should say combo lists, stacks decks that are often trying to play Rule of Law and will have frequently like a lot of extra mana, even playing their one spell per turn. You know, being able to spend it with on +1/+1 counters is cool. But you know, by comparison, so is like a future sight type effect that does actually hit a reasonable amount of cards in your deck. So is it better than Shalai? I don't know. I think that there's perhaps an argument that it could be. So I think it's cool.
It at least is playable by quite a few, like...
There's this precedent for this to like, be playable.
There's a lot of very... good reasons to play this.
There's good precedent for this.
I was trying to think through this while you're talking through that. I can't think of any green white commanders that really have card advantage.
Well,
in commands other than like Sithis. Well, specifically
green white alone. Yeah.
Like other than like Sithis, where you're forcing an enchantress, I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head that's like great.
Well, hold on. There's the whatchamacallit.
There's the human that. That narrowed it down.
Yeah. No, there's the Ken Bauman special. Dalsim, but Ken.
Yeah, I say that as I have also.
Dalsim. Yeah. But I know that Ken is kind of moved on.
That type of deck leads to a way different green white deck than what exists, which is a cool space to be in.
Yeah.
At least for a commander.
Yeah. Like, I think this does the stacks thing really well. And I think it's also hilarious. So I'm just looking at green white. So if you play this as your commander, here are a list of some stuff that's played in Yasharn, Esper, for instance, Sentinel. Avacyn's Pilgrim, Esper Sentinel, Sarah Ascendant. Let's see here. Sylvan Safekeeper, Ulvenwald Tracker, Weathered Wayfarer, Dranith Magistrate, Aethersworn Canonist. Let's see. Adeline, Resplendent Cathar. What else do we got here? We have Lauren of the Third Path. We have Sanctum Prelate. We have Yisan. We have Dalsim. We have Shalai, Sereth, Linvala, Slippery Bogbonder. We have Ariel. That one's not an angel or a human. We have Bird Chancellor Advisor. Of the Annex. There are a lot of cards that you can play off of the top. And that's just looking at Yasharn and how they play. And I'm telling you, there are so many good humans and Angels in this game.
Yeah, it also hits Witherbloom, like, Apprentice, which is like,
yeah, pretty reasonable. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it hits Opposition Agent when, you know, if you're an Abzan.
When you're, yeah, black, yeah.
What else comes to mind? Yeah, I'm like blanking. If people still play Dark Confidant, I guess theoretically that's an option.
I mean, there's a lot of things that it can hit. Like, I mean, that's kind of the reality of it. And it's just like, it's one of those things where I look at it and I go, I feel like this is a very obvious, I play this in Timna Kamal very easily. Let's look at Timna Kamal for a second. And so we have Op Agent, Ranger Captain of Eos. We can also, that those are the two big ones there. Obviously, Sereth gives stuff, Death Touch, and Hexproof also. So if you just have a Sereth out and you leave this untapped, hey, my board is Hexproof. So, like, that at a minimum, this card as a commander is a creature tutor away from all my permanents have Hexproof. It's not a bad place to start.
Also gets to cast the stuff off of the top deck tutors.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so its starting offer is pretty good.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I was saying, you know, it's not yet clear to me that it is necessarily better than Shalai, but I think it is close enough to Shalai, you know, just because of like the first line of text.
I think
that like it's very clearly playable.
I think there's similarities to them, but I feel like they're ultimately different cards. Like they play differently. I feel like
they probably take the same slot though.
You're gonna end up one is gonna be better for you.
And it could be this one is routinely going to be better. Like, you know,
I mean, outside of Shalai and Halar, I feel like this is just better because like Shalai and Halar obviously has the like the synergy with Shalai, like naturally. But like this outside of that, I think just is a better value engine.
Well, but, so also you have to consider in a lot of the decks that are playing Shalai,
they use them as a wincon.
They're using it also as a wincon while defending your board.
Right.
Right. That's why I'm like not saying that this is like obviously better, right? Like the mana outlet is actually relevant for some of those decks, but you know, not necessarily so relevant perhaps outside of like the really specific like slow green white stacks decks like Yasharn that you mentioned before, because like if it's Timna Kamal, like you could just play Kamal or you even have combo finishes like in that deck. Like a lot of the time they are playing Witherbloom combo, so I think like if that's the type of deck you're playing, and I think that those are probably, you know, a little bit better positioned, you know, this is going to be better in a lot of situations than Shalai.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Certified good card. So overall, that kind of wraps things up now. We're kind of done with our March of the Machines stuff. Final thoughts, kind of looking at I kind of look at March of the Machines and Aftermath as like basically the same set. They're not, but in my mind, they are functionally the same set. Like Phoenix, you and I have talked about it a little bit. We talked about it a little bit in the car when we were driving from Minneapolis. The set, like, what are your feelings on the set? Because it definitely, like we said at the top of the show, very much feels like this could have been this March of the Machine and Aftermath stuff could have been a bigger thing, right? Like from a set perspective.
maybe we could have split off a little bit of this. I think that there's maybe a little bit too much going on in. I feel like Wizards rightly evaluated that there was too much going on in regular March of the Machine and pulled this off of it. Or I don't necessarily know, but and even still, there's maybe too much going on in March of the Machine. So I don't think that combining them is necessarily the right answer, but maybe there was a better solution than dropping what is effectively a half set or maybe a quarter set.
Yeah,
it's barely a quarter set.
I just don't love the distribution model. I think if they wanted to do something like this, what could have been really cool is they could have maybe released it as, you know, like a box set where you get kind of just all 50 cards. And like, or, you know, maybe even something a little bit more interesting, like perhaps like a board game style of release that they've done in the past. You know, there's like so many interesting things that they could have done with this sort of like almost supplementary set. You know, it could have been a core set that was like fleshed out a little bit, like you said, with a few extra reprints, not just Training Grounds.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
I mean, that's what this feels like to me, is this feels like a small core set.
Like a very small core set, yeah.
Well, yes.
And but it, like, and it's just it, like, oh, okay, we get 5 card collector boosters? Like, that's kind of ridiculous. Like,
yeah. That are priced the same.
They're priced the same, but like, there's like a million different treatments on the cards. So like, I don't know. Yeah. You know, that's, it's pretty clearly like an experiment, right, to see if this type of thing could work and if it would be adopted by the market.
Well, and I think this is more in line with like what other card games do with like these, like do the little micro expansions where you have like Pokemon does this, and like I don't think Yu-Gi-Oh does it, but I know like the My Hero Academia stuff does it, and like what is it, Blood and Flesh or Flesh and Blood does this a little bit, where it's just they have the smaller scale releases.
Right.
So it's like,
this is not even, it's draftable, not unprecedented, right? Like,
right. Like it's not well, it is draftable. It's just weird as hell.
It's not designed to be drafted though.
Correct. Yes, it is.
It is. Yes.
Oh yeah. I was under the impression that this is not even meant to be a draft product, because like,
it very much is.
It feels like it's just all like bombs and then like kind of weird cards that don't actually do anything half the time. Like,
as somebody who played the draft on on Arena, the limited environment for the set is bonkers. Like,
I would compare it to a double feature when it comes to like the actual gameplay piece's intention of this, where it's like a weird combination of two sets.
Yeah.
And I think like its own draft environment.
This has like no mana fixing.
Oh, it has like Phyrexia March of the Machine cards in the draft booster.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's like it does pull from that. Okay. So it's like it has that, and then these are also in those slots.
Still feels weird to me. I mean,
I very much agree.
Especially because,
but I think this could have been such a good core set. Like, I just like, I look, like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh, the de-sparked Planeswalkers is a great core set, like concept, where it's like, hey, we have this core set, we don't have any Planeswalkers in it, but all of our major character or all of our major like things, our big creature things in it, are going to be these de-sparked Planeswalkers. And it feels very much like you could have done something along the lines of what they did in Origins, right? Like, because that feels like the comparison here. Is this could have been Magic Origins,
story focused,
but instead, but instead we get whatever this is. And like, the cards in the set aren't bad. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the set. Like, I think if this set had a lot of like duds in it, it would be way more appalling. But at minimum, there is interesting enough stuff in it, like across formats, that I think it passes the test, but doesn't, it gives you the like, hey, maybe let's not do this again feeling.
Yeah. I think what could have been really cool, and again, I said this before, but like, you know, I'm just going to expand upon it to deal with the various treatments and stuff that they did, you know, which is obviously a big part of this release. is, again, if you had done like the 50 card box set and like, you know, any number of cards have some percentage to be in an alternate treatment in the box. Mm-hmm. And that's like the kind of the gambling aspect of it, let's say. You know, I think that could have been received super well by the community, especially if it was priced appropriately. But like, you know, collector boosters that cost fucking an arm and a leg, and then you've got like five cards in them, is unreal. Like it's insane.
The actual booster packs, like the draft boosters or the set boosters, are like fine. Like, I think they have those priced pretty appropriately at $80. I think the collector boosters, the way they designed the collector boosters, were a giant whiff. Like, that was a big swing and a miss on the collector boosters at end.
Yeah.
Like, I think the actual, like, the actual draft set is fine. But, like,
yeah,
the collector side of it is
even still, though,
just a complete, like, punt.
Because I feel like the draft, well, maybe this is less true in the draft format because there's theoretically more than 50 cards in the set for drafting. But like, if you, you know, I feel like you're still going to get a lot of repetition, right? Like,
yes,
it's nearly the same draft as March of the Machines.
I will, right?
With like a few different cards, I guess. Yeah.
So
yeah,
but how does that even make sense? Like, you've got like, so, the war going on in like half, yeah, of the cards, and then half the cards are like outcome cards. Like, it just doesn't, yeah, even make sense, like, in the actual kind of flavor of the draft format. Like,
so my theory on this is a little bit expanded, because there's two things going on that begin with this release that I think that this set is starting to either answer or trying to move the game in a particular direction. One is, we just got standard moved to a 3-year release, a 3-year rotation schedule. So I do think that that is a signal that with the set, moving it to a 3-year like turnaround, probably says to me that we are going to get more like sets along this, like, maybe not exactly like this. I think they're going to fix, like, fine tune this idea a little bit more, but I think they're going to pull more from like the Pokemons and the Flesh and Bloods and the stuff like that, and do more of these smaller scale releases. And the reason I think that is because it also too does a lot to make the arena economy a lot better. And the reason I say that is your hit rate for rares and mythics in your arena packs are significantly higher in these limited, in this like limited release than it is in a full scale release. So it does do something for the arena like economy that is good. It's like maybe not the step that people wanted particularly, but I can say, as somebody who's been playing a lot of arena lately, like, spending 1,000, like, if I have the choice of spending 1,000 coins on a pack of Aftermath or a pack of March of the Machine, I'm picking the Aftermath pack, because I know I'm going to be getting rares and I'm going to be hitting my wild cards at a more consistent rate than I am in a March of the Machine pack. Like, they're just better for the arena economy. So I think that is an aspect of it, because, and it's also very clear from whether it's the surveying or if it's the way that they were talking about arena at Minneapolis, with like, they had the arena booth set up, they had arena stations for Black Lotus players to go and play that were like fully stocked with like every card that is on arena, is that they want arena and paper to be the same thing. And I think doing things like this is, in their mind, a step in that direction. And that's my tinfoil hat. That is maybe not a tinfoil hat, but just a hat.
An interesting thought. I mean, yeah, I feel like, I don't know if it necessarily does anything to push people to play arena if they weren't playing arena before. And theoretically, that would be one of the bigger drivers for them, is the conversion, right?
the big, like,
this is actually one of the first non, well, I guess this is a standard set, but this is the start of, they announced some of the stuff in Minneapolis as well, but this is the start of them actually converting not standard sets one-to-one into arena.
Right.
Going forward.
Like, Lord of the Rings is going to be on arena. Right. I believe Doctor Who's going to be on arena. So it's like one of the things that I do think, like, one of the things I like, wow, we really are going on a tangent, but it's fine. One of the pieces that keeps people away from arena is the, like, arena economy, right? Because, like, a lot of the reasons people don't get into arena is the economy is kind of not it. The economy is very friendly to people who've been playing arena since the beginning. Arena is not very friendly to people who are just picking up arena. And I think that moving towards having maybe one to three big full sets a year with, like, a couple of these supplementary sets thrown in throughout, in between, being like a way to potentially fix the arena, like, help not fix the arena economy, but improve it, if that makes sense. Like, help make that a little bit more viable for people. And maybe I'm wrong. I could be very wrong on that. But, like, I can say that I got back into arena, started buying these packs, and I was just like, oh, I can, like, convert wild cards way faster now, which is a very nice thing to have. And I could also just get the cards I want faster. So. That's my thoughts on the welcome to Callahan's rant about March of the Machine and how I think this is not the last time we're going to see stuff like this.
That's unfortunate.
I don't think it's I think they're going to make it better in the future if we get it, because the message of the collector boosters are a swing and a miss is definitely been received by Wizards. Like, the vibe I get is that they want to make a good product that people can enjoy and have good access to. And, like, I think that this definitely is closer in that direction than making more, like, bigger premium products, if that makes sense. So having these sorts of sets be more accessible, I think, is definitely a good thing. But anyway, I could go on and on and on about that for hours on end. I think, but that's kind of our thoughts on what's it called, on March of the Machine, the aftermath. Which did you notice that the set code is Matt?
I was just thinking that.
It was a March of the Machine. So you had Mom and Matt. it feels like this is the stepdad of the sets, right? Because, like, this is Mom. This is my mom. And this is Matt. This is my mom's friend, Matt. I'll be here all week. Yeah. Anyway, it's great seeing everybody. Make sure to check out Team Turn 3. Like, that's where we are streaming every Sunday from 6?
7.
To,
well, 6 for seven, you, I guess. 7, yeah, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I'm about to be back in Eastern Standard Time. Less than a month. Less than a month.
Oh, wow.
I spent today talking to a moving company and giving them a tour of my house to be like, here's all the stuff you get to move. So that was fun. But with that being said, thank you all for tuning in. If you want to support the show, please do. Make sure to head on over to our merch store, pick up your Mind Sculptors themed merch. And that'd be really great. If you want to get our playmat, which, if you were at Minneapolis, I was handing out prints of the playmat. You've definitely seen Phoenix use it. I use it on stream all the time. If enough people want it, I will look into doing maybe a Kickstarter or something so that we can get those ordered for people. But I need people to be into it. So if that is something that people are interested in, please leave a comment down below. Also, if you have any thoughts on what we talked about today, please get an argument in our comments. I encourage discussion and arguments in our comment section. They are welcome. Also, if you would like to support the show in other ways monetarily, you can head on over to patreon.com/themindsculptors. There's also a link in the description and also a link in our link tree, which is also in the description. So all of those things, we will be updating our Patreon this year. I don't know that it's going to be until Q4, but we're kind of in the process of giving TMS a little bit of a facelift. So stay on the lookout for some of the new stuff that we're doing. But with that being said, thank you for joining us. And from all of us here at the Mind Sculptors, I'm Callahan, and we'll see you next time. I'm what you don't want, 상처 속에 의미를 찾고 있는 날.